This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can also listen on demand. But we are also streaming on the iHeartRadio app as well as the TuneIn Radio app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey.
My company is, he is each and every Friday on the program. He is the Memphis Grizzlies beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. He's also the host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Episodes available each and every weekday wherever you find your podcast. Follow him on the Everything app at DeMichael C. DeMichael Cole, good day, sir.
Good day, Jeffrey. What's going on, man?
Oh, man, I'm excited for, I think this is the best football weekend of the year.
Ooh.
In terms of...
Yeah.
Two watchable games tonight.
Yep.
You have a balanced schedule tomorrow where you have a game in almost every single window. Mm-hmm. And then on Sunday, we have a game in every single window. And then we have a good Sunday night game. I got to think overall, this is about as good as it gets. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Of course, we'll talk the Grizzlies with DeMichael, get his perspective on what is going on with, of course, the NBA team. We will then welcome Blake Topmeyer to the program, get his thoughts on this weekend in college football, some coaching carousel, Nuggets as well. Get into the list during hour number two. Thursday night football happened, I guess.
Yeah. It occurred.
It was something. I mean, I didn't think your Jets were bad. I thought they actually acquitted themselves nicely to a certain degree.
Well, the fact that you think that wasn't bad just...
They were marginal. Yeah. Marginal
Listen,
at best.
Listen, if you need someone to give you a review of bad football, I'm your guy.
You know what bad football looks
yes,
like.
Yes, I'm very well versed in all forms, from the fun bad to unwatchable bad to...
You've seen it all.
Team running the wing T in 2021 in the NFL? Yep, I've seen that one. I've pretty much checked all the boxes there. So we'll talk some NFL there. As well, we'll get into our games of the weekend, we'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But I guess let's start first here with the Grizzlies, DeMichael. And
start with the Grizzlies.
So, George and I, we've been talking throughout the week. Mm-hmm. And with everything that's going on, I think this is where I want to start. Are the Grizzlies worse on offense or defense?
It's crazy that this is even a question, but I think they're worse offensively. It's not by a lot, but I think they're a worse offensive team. There's just so much going wrong and so much that people want to change on the offensive end.
Yeah.
It just feels unrealistic. Like, it's like, oh, if Josh shoots better, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope shoots better, and then Jaren gets more shots, and then Zach Edey comes back, and then Ty Jerome comes back, and then they look good when they come back, and then these guys play more minutes, then we'll have a good Grizzlies offense.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because that was the other aspect of it.
Defense is just more effort.
Well, the thing that's interesting is I feel like, I mean, I'm clearly an Edie stockholder, and I have been since the draft.
Yeah.
But now I feel like I'm in this weird spot where they've been so bad that
where,
even
like
going with even the Edie haters are like, just wait till Edie gets back. And I'm like, whoa. I'm not
that's
asking my guy to be like the best center in the
that's
league.
A lot to put on a second year guy.
Yeah. And on top of that, he's like coming off of an injury. So like there's obviously going to be some rust, whatnot.
Some limitations. Yeah.
I do think, though, we're at the point where I understand there are locker room implications, whatnot, but it's like the only way I think you can keep people's interest is if Zach can play tomorrow night, if they move Zach into the starting lineup and Cedric into the starting lineup, and then you have it Ja, Jalen, Jaren.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's like the only thing like we have to hope for.
That's
like just and just see is get as much
write it out. Yep.
As much of a look of that as you can to try and determine if this is what you want to build around.
Yeah, for sure. Because in that case, the only difference from a very successful Grizzlies lineup last season, like if you go back to last season, the lineup, the five-man lineup of Ja, Jalen, Dez, Jaren Jackson Jr., Zach Edey was one of the best five-man lineups in the NBA. So now when you add in Cedric Cowart, you're just flip-flopping him out for Desmond Bane in that case. And we've seen the impact that Cedric Cowart has had. So, yeah, I think a lot of people want to see that lineup. And, I mean, it's down to this coach staff. Like, will they actually – deploy it? Like, will we actually see it and not just see it, you know, in a game and say, oh, look, those five guys are on the court at the same time. Will they be out there for more than 2 minutes together?
Right. Well, will they be out there beyond tip-off in the first media break?
because it might be one of those situations you're like, oh, look, that's the lineup, and you run to the microwave or something. You throw something in the microwave and you come back, and then Jock Landale or, you know, Vince Williams or someone's checked into the game.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because on the one hand, I don't know. I think you could give Phil Jackson this personnel and he's probably not winning with it.
So what does that tell you? That means the problems are above the coach.
Well, but then the other thing that to me, though, is like I still think the personnel's good enough to not get beat by 40.
And that's where I agree.
And so that's kind of where I've struggled with the how much – how much blame does Tuomas deserve versus, like, you know what I mean? Like, I do think some people just want to kill the coach for the sake of killing the coach.
It's easy, yeah.
And to a certain degree, like, hey, man, that's part of the job.
Mm-hmm.
But I do find myself watching the game and not exactly thinking, you know, this team is – they're not good, but they're well coached. I don't really ever have that thought.
Yeah, it goes back to your first question. Is this team worse on offense or defense? That tells you everything you need to know. Even the worst teams that have been well coached over the course of any sport you look at, you always can go back to the fact of, man, hey, look, hey, they're getting beat, but that team has an identity. Like, wait till they get some players. Wait till they get a couple shooters. Like, you can see them being better.
The vision.
Yeah. What's the vision here?
I don't know because that's the other
all we know is they're playing fast.
Well, like, that was the other thing about Wednesday night with Tuomas, where he's like, when he's discussing, like, the identity, like, to me, it's like, what is it? Like, to me, it seems like the identity is more theoretical.
It is. That's it.
And so
that's what he preaches, the long game. You know, what we can be, what we will be.
And I guess that's another complicating factor.
Uh-huh.
At what point do you pull the ripcord? Because I do somewhat sympathize with the thought of, we can't just pull the plug now. Like, we believe in this, but we don't have the people yet. Once we get the people, then you can see. But it's almost like at the same time, it's like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, at a certain point, it's like, aren't there other solutions?
Yeah, I'm usually always on the side of patience in these situations, especially when a guy doesn't get what he wants to see. Like, you know, a coach is never going to – well, I'm not going to say never, but most coaches aren't going to throw their teams under the bus, right? But they'll drop little, you know, crumbs to let you know what the situation is. And one thing that he's constantly said in a lot of his interviews is we're undermanned with playmakers. Undermanned is the word he's used. Playmakers and rebounding. Okay, that's very well a message of we're not going to be the team that you guys are expecting to see till we get Ty Jerome, till we get Zach Edey, and probably another playmaker or rebounding in addition to those guys. But especially, we know that Ty Jerome's going to help with the playmaking. We know that Zach Edey's going to help with the rebound. He's constantly alluding to the fact that we don't have enough in either department. So I know as a coach, he's probably thinking, like, look, I can't do what I want to do. I can't show you what I'm fully capable of when I got one hand tied behind my back. You're asking me to go into a heavyweight fight against these Western Conference teams, and you're saying only use your left jab. I can't uppercut with my right hand. I can't, you know, so it's like it's a little bit of that. But at the same time, every time that I excuse him on that part, I always go back to the effort, man. It just doesn't – this doesn't look like guys who are saying, Coach, I'll die for you out there. It just – I don't see that.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, relitigate the decision to fire Taylor Jenkins. I just mean this from a simple statement of fact. In the end, what got Taylor fired was a string of those performances.
Yeah.
Like, where it just looked like
looked like they checked out.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, my whole thing is, like, okay, you can – you can be on the side if he should have been fired. You can be on the side. Like, in the end, what actually got him fired was that stretch of, like, 7 or 8 games in a row where they just looked horrible. They looked like they weren't giving effort. The old checked out, all of that. I guess, though, the other problem that I see is, much like we were talking about with Edey, okay, we are talking about pieces that were supposed to be a part of their top eight.
Yeah.
But we are also talking about, we're waiting on the return of a guy in Edey that was in and out of the lineup, and I actually think that was one of Taylor's bigger mistakes, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
That's probably a LaRoche thing, and so
for sure,
I can acknowledge that there are complicating factors.
Yeah,
but we're also talking about Ty Jerome, like the guy that's supposed to be like a 6th or 7th guy.
Yeah, 6th man of the year candidate.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about these are the pieces that we are waiting on. And it's like, okay, so what does that take us from? Like,
it's
losing by 10?
It's marginal. And that's why I go back to what you said about, you know, them losing by 30 points. They lost by 30-plus twice this season. 32 and 36, I think it was. And it's like, okay, you know, you lose games, but Ty Jerome and Zach Edey aren't the difference in you losing by 30 and winning a basketball game. So it's not like you're waiting on a high usage player that's going to drastically improve you on a certain level. You're waiting on guys who are going to improve you in stretches. And I just don't see it. Like, we shouldn't depend on these guys to be the saviors.
If you wanted to take the most optimistic perspective, and you can disagree.
Okay.
But to me, it seems like part of the reason why they got blown out on Tuesday and Wednesday was second chance points.
Yep.
And so
they got killed on the glass that second game.
With Edey, at least maybe you cut the second chance opportunities. I don't know if maybe half's too much, but maybe by a third.
I say a third because you know what? Edey's got to play a lot of minutes.
Because that's the other thing.
He's out there. Because especially when he first gets back. I mean, look at how much these guys are playing. And they've played 10 games at this point. How much do you think a 7'4", 280, 290-pound guy is going to play? Coming off an ankle injury. It's not going to play a lot initially.
I mean, my guess is, you'd set the over-under 25 minutes probably?
First game?
Maybe.
22 maybe. First game.
I mean, I think the other problem that they have is they have to have him out there.
You got to have him out there.
Like, it might just, to me, it's like, I guess what I could see is, they see how long he can go, and then they pull him out. But to your point, that's not really what we've been seeing. It's like these stints.
That's not the data, And we saw last season, now it was late in the season, it was March, he gave Edey more run than Taylor Jenkins and the previous coaching staff.
Yes.
Way more run. I mean, it was the first time I think Edey eclipsed 30 minutes in a game, and he did it like in consecutive games. So there is a precedent that's been set on what Zach Edey means to Tuomasi Slow as a player from his impact. And again, going back to him alluding to the fact that this is a guy that we need. So I think any restrictions will be just probably in the earlier part. But it's like, you're 4-9. I mean, how patient can you afford to be? in this situation, because the schedule's going to get a little bit easier after you come off this road trip. But, I mean, it's still not a bunch of just checkmark wins out there.
No, I think what we've seen is the only teams that you can sit there and comfortably feel like, okay, they're probably going to win is if they play like the bottom five of the league.
The worst, yeah.
But, I mean, what, the Celtics were 5-7 going in to the other night. And, yes, they had a good night, but that might be related. Yeah. Everyone might have a good night when they see the Grizzlies.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm at the point now where if they have Zach available, I think you have to bump Cedric up. Now, do we have an injury update on KCP?
No, nothing substantial. Again, the KCP situation has been bothering him for a while. It's something I believe he could manage, but it's going to be a tolerance. And then at some point, the Grizzlies may say, look, this has been bothering you for a while. Let's just shut it down for a couple days. And I think this is more about how they want to handle it than, you know, anything else. So we'll find out.
I mean, it just feels like, right, like the obvious thing is play the five guys that we were talking about.
Yeah.
Start those guys. Play them. Like, I know you want to do this whole stagger thing with you don't want that many minutes without Ja or Jaren on the floor.
Yep.
But I would also ask, how's that going?
It's not working.
Like, I understand it's a math problem, but I would also argue you're better off at this point. I think it seems you should just get as many minutes with them at their best than trying to stagger, because staggering thing has not worked.
It's always been the case to me. And he's preached adaptability, which I think, again, is important in this situation. But where I have the disconnect with East Lowe in terms of that is when your roster gets gutted with injuries, you got to play the guys more.
I've told George this.
Yeah.
I will just never buy into the idea that more minutes for your worst players is a good thing. Even if they have more energy.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that the disparity, in my opinion, between a seventh guy on the rotation and the 12th guy in the rotation, that is a significant margin.
It is.
Because usually that's the difference between probably guy that's going to have a double-digit year's career and a guy that might not be in the league next year.
Be in the league, yeah. Yep.
And that's a huge gap to me.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess I do also somewhat sympathize with the idea of, like, all right, do you really want to empty the tank in November? Like, I get it. It's a long 82-game season. But there's also, to me, an element of when you are this shorthanded, like, part of where the money is for these guys is, like, man, when you're shorthanded, they got to be the guys.
You're one of the youngest teams in the league. This isn't the Clippers roster. This isn't the Warriors where you got guys who have to sit out automatically on a back-to-back. You're young. Like, what's the point of being this youthful team if your minutes distribution is comparable to, you know, older rosters?
Yeah, no, like, I mean, it literally looks like the late-stage Spurs trying to manage Tim Duncan.
Yeah, Ginobili .
Yeah, Ginobili and Duncan, like, in their, like, year 20.
Yeah.
Okay, I was thinking about this earlier today. I do not want this to come across as some type of slight towards the reporters, because that's not what I mean at all.
Okay.
I'm talking about from an individual basis. I don't care what players that were shipped out have to say about a team. And
I know where you're going with this. Okay.
So let's take, for instance, the Marcus Smart and the Dylan Brooks comments.
Yep.
I'm not saying that they're, like, meaningless or that they don't maybe have some merit.
Uh-huh.
My point is, I don't care because it's not coming from, like, a place of constructive criticism.
Uh-huh.
It's more of, like, coming from a place of get your thoughts out there.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's no different than, like, we just saw Marcus Smart and Dylan Brooks tweet. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just, you know what I mean? Like, and so I just find it's like the next guy that gets traded or doesn't get re-signed.
Yeah.
That has something positive to say. It's like, okay, that'll be the first. Like,
yeah.
I guess maybe the one revealing aspect of this, and I guess maybe he hinted at this at Suns Media Day. It does seem like Dylan wanted to be back more than we thought.
Oh, for sure. I never got the sense that he wanted to leave. The thing was, he wasn't going to just be some 3-and-D guy here. It was such a different situation than him going somewhere else with this big contract and accepting a new role. Like, Dylan got here, and that 2018 season, he was like the bright and shining armor. It was like, oh, we found a second round pick, right? Oh,
I mean, remember when we had the Brooks for Brooks night, the Brooks trade night,
Marshawn,
with Chris Wallace thinking he was trading Marshawn, and
it was the Suns.
Wasn't it the Suns?
It was the Suns,
and the Suns thought they were getting Dylan.
Yep,
there was panic when people thought they were getting rid of Dylan.
Like, no, yes. What are you doing? So you factor all that in, then Jaren comes, and then. Okay, now you're number two. Then the next season, Ja comes, and now you're number three. Then the next season, Desmond Bane comes, and you're still number three, and then year two, Dez comes, and it's like, all right, you're number four now, buddy.
Yeah, because year one, Dez, we were still doing the – weren't
Grayson
we doing
Allen.
Who was hot, who had the hot hand?
Yeah, yeah.
It was like you're kind of rolling like with a reliever, like, okay, which one's got the hot hand? Yeah.
But when they moved Grayson Allen and Dez had that really good season, it's like, okay – you're number four now. And, you know, egos are a part of this. Like, this is an ego sport. And Dylan has always felt like, you know, he's a culture changer. He's a culture impact. And, I mean, I think that's credible. Like, he's definitely missed from that presence in Memphis. But I see your point about the whole, you know, you're not really interested in what those guys have to say. I looked at it from a different perspective, though.
All right, you tell me what you thought.
Yeah, because it just was funny to me that the GM in a playoff series, right, this is some random regular season game. If Dylan was right, the GM told him, "Don't take more than six shots of the game." Where your head coach is right over there.
I agree with you that I thought of all the things that I read.
Yeah,
the one that I think was the most, assuming that it's true.
Yeah,
because there is always the unreliable narrator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With that being said, if you're saying, Jeffrey, do you believe that what Dylan said is true? Yeah, I do. Uh-huh. Because you know why?
Everybody was saying it. Everybody was saying it.
Now, I do agree with you.
Uh-huh.
As a GM or roster guy, you're not the coach of the team.
No.
And by the way, if this is true, and granted, I guess the defense would be this was a few years ago, it doesn't exactly put to bed my concerns that about the whole, I just let him coach the team. I just put the team out there and he coaches it. It's like,
You talk with the coach, right? And the coach says, okay, I got it.
Right.
Because Stone in Houston isn't going to go over Udoka.
I mean, do you think Presti and do you think Presti's sitting there like, all right, boys. Like,
oh, Dag, no, you got it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I do agree with you on that. I was talking more of in the – in the general, like, this doesn't even have to be the Grizzlies. Like, for instance, I'm well-versed in this because we've talked about when players leave the Giants, they immediately get better.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily – I'm well-trained in, I can't wait to read this next story about what the Giants do wrong. It's like, okay, but I also know
where it's – I've learned that, too. Like, you know, people are – tend to be, and you know this even probably better than me, people get a little bit more loose-lipped on the way out.
Yes. Yes, right. Because, well, I mean, A, they might have an extra grind.
Yep.
Which, again, I'm not necessarily saying that whatever they said is meritless, but it's not like it's coming from the place of let's have the team meeting.
You could have said this at exit interview.
And hash it out.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. We could have.
Like, it's coming from a place where you want to make it sting, and that's fine, but I also don't have to take it like, oh, this is coming from the right place. It's coming usually from a place of, you got something that you got an axe to grind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do we have any other Grizzlies thoughts?
I mean, I'll say this. This is, regardless of what's the final answer will be on Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, I think history is about to repeat itself. I think history's
another bad trade.
No, not a bad trade. Last season, let's go back to last season.
All right.
Beginning of the season, Marcus Smart's your starter. He gets hurt. Jalen Wells steps into the lineup.
Yep.
Marcus Smart's spot's gone.
Yep.
It's about to happen again.
I think you're right. Because
it's about to happen again. He's not going to get the spot back.
Like, honestly, though, I kind of thought in training camp, it ended up not being the guy that I thought.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, remember last year there was, like, the thought of, wouldn't they be better
Vince Williams?
If Vince started at the two.
Yeah.
And then Marcus kind of played the swingman role, like, whatnot.
Yep.
But I think you're right in this sense that there's also an added pressure of which is you're not winning.
Right.
And you've got to start giving people reasons to care. This is like something people would care about.
Yeah.
Like people are much more interested in this.
It's all I hear now. Everyone's a lot of fans, and it's very early in the season, but some fans have gotten to the point like when you get to that point in the season, usually it happens later, but Grizzlies fans, well, a lot of Grizzlies fans that I've talked to at least seem to be to the fact that I'm just watching Cedric Coward and, you know, whatever other player that excites them right now. I do not care about the
end
result.
Feels like it kind of stops there.
Yeah.
It stops at Cedric. It's not even like Ja's a super fun watch right now.
He's not right now. No.
And I mean, I'm trying to think. Okay, let's go through. Who would you say is playing
well
above a 7.5?
Above a 7.5. Cedric Howard.
I weirdly get your arrows ready, everybody. I think Santi's playing decently well.
I knew you were gonna say that. And I was gonna put him right at 7.
Do you realize? No, I wanna be clear. I'm with you.
But yeah, if you put the number right on the money.
If it's that threshold. But do you realize how hard it is to get beat by 38 and have a player that played 25 minutes with
a positive?
And it was a positive? Like, that seems statistically impossible.
Yeah. Santi's been solid. He's been very solid.
I was mentioning this. I think you'll agree.
Yeah.
He did have a terrible first couple of games, and in particular, night one.
Yeah.
And the thing about Santi is, year in, year out, whatever, he never gets a chance to make a second or third impression. Yeah. Whatever happens to him on night one, everyone just decides that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Now, it's worked for him in the positive. Remember the year where Jaren started off injured, and Santi started that first month, and he played pretty well?
Mm-hmm.
It actually colored how people felt in the sense that he didn't really have a great second half of the year.
Yep.
But because people just remembered what happened initially, it was like, yeah, Santi had a good year.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of works both ways, but he never gets an opportunity to make a second impression.
He's averaging, I think, like 12 points a game right now. And he's doing that coming off the bench. I think, like you said, he just has those, he has a bunch of, how do I say it? He has those checked in a fool moments that people just can't get out their head.
He has the loud mistakes. Yeah, he doesn't have the quiet mistakes.
He doesn't have, like, he's bound to in the fourth quarter to throw a behind the back pass that goes right into the hand of the opponent, and everyone's like, Santi, what are you doing? Or he's bound to, like, he's supposed to swing it to Cam Spencer on this play, and he, like, takes one dribble, goes to the side, and takes this wild three pointer. And after he's been 2 of 4 on threes before that, but it's just this one three turns into a miss, and the other team goes on the other end and gets a wide-open layup. It's like those are more of the Santi mistakes.
No, you're 100% right in the sense of—
He's been their savior on the glass. No one's talking about that.
He's
been the best rebounder.
And again, that's a low bar.
It's a very low bar.
All right, I understand it's not a perfect stat.
Uh-huh.
But if y'all happen to swing on over to Basketball Reference and take a look at value over replacement—
For Santi?
Just in general, on the team.
Oh no.
The highest basketball player on the Memphis Grizzlies is a 0.4. 0.4.
That sounds about right, because there's not a lot of value over the replacement.
Do you care to guess who that is?
I think for your case, it's going to be Santi, but I would.
Nope.
I would,
nope. Nope.
Cedric.
It is Cedric.
Right? It's got to be Cedric.
Do y'all know who number two is?
Okay, now it's Santi.
Correct. It's tied with these two names that
is one of them Cam.
One you could have talked me into.
Jaren?
Cam? And y'all ready for it? Jock Landale.
Oh, wow.
Again, I said it's an imperfect stat.
Oh.
I'll give Jock one thing.
This is the John Morant lineup.
Conchar's at a 0.1. Vince is dead even.
Okay.
PJ Hall's dead even.
Where are the stars? Where are your star players?
Jaren is at 8, and Ja is at minus 0.3, 15th out of 15.
Huh?
Do you know who's 14?
Is it Jaren?
Jalen. Jaren's at 8.
Oh, that's right. My bad.
Jaren's been perfectly...
Ja has the lowest value above replacement.
Correct.
Memphis Grizzlies.
Yes.
I'm telling you, this is what I'm saying.
When you shoot 28% from the field or whatever it is,
I mean,
right,
yeah,
now,
but he's making some passes here. I mean,
that's
he turned
true.
It over.
I bring all this up to say, I understand we all can nitpick, but there's also an element of if you watch a team for 82 games, like I always used to think this, when you cover a team, you see the team's warts way more than anyone else does. Mm-hmm. And more times than not, you can have a more negative view than maybe the outsiders do.
Yeah.
Are we really, I just kind of think it's sometimes as simple as this.
Uh-huh.
The two best players are playing like ass.
Yeah.
One's really playing like ass, and the other is just stinky.
Yeah, stinky.
But, I mean, Jaren is, like,
his
stinky.
Efficiency is up, but it's like, why? What's the cost?
Well, it's like, and I also feel like his efficiency's up because he's taking fewer shots that he knows he's going to make.
Yeah, that's it.
It's like... Oh, well, I made more putts today. It's like, well, yeah, every putt I had was like from 3 feet.
That's a good point.
Like, it's there's kind of that element.
Yeah.
Like, so, and I don't know, but I guess the flip side of the argument would be how much
room to improve.
Well, like, that's true. There's that would be the spin zone.
Yeah, okay.
But is Ja playing this bad if, I don't know, Landale catches half of the lobs, or
it's deeper than that because he's got to make some shots. Like,
I mean, I think we talked about that shooting chart that's going around online. That is ugly.
And he said it himself, like, he likes the shots that he's getting. And the coaches said, we'll live with those shots. So,
yeah, I mean,
someone they got to fall.
I'm with you in this sense that I don't like. I never thought he was going to ever be like a 38, 40% three-point shooter.
You didn't ask me if I like the shots.
but like, I do think he's not a 14% three-point shooter.
No,
you know what I mean?
No. He can shoot better than that.
Like, so like, there is to me an idea that at some point the numbers are going to come back to about the average. But I don't know. Like, that's... like,
yeah,
what
he's never started this bad.
That supposes that there's never been such thing as a bad year.
Yeah.
And it's like what always annoys me in sports of when somebody has a career night, man, if he could just play like that all year. It's like, that was literally the greatest time. He's played sports for 20 years. That was the single best night he's ever had. It's like, that's not the norm.
He's never hit 3 home runs in a game.
Yeah.
Again,
like, he was just, like, that was as good as he can physically play.
Yeah.
But it also works in the inverse. Like, sometimes, like, you can just have a horrible year.
Yeah.
And I hope it's not that case.
Yeah, and there are some factors, you know, that we can add in. You know, he didn't really play in the preseason, right?
Yep.
And he's talked about it. I mean, I asked him the other day, you have your legs under you, and that doesn't seem to be the case yet. But, again, you know, I can't make too many excuses for that because Steph's 37, man. Like,
well, I mean, there's also this element with Ja. Like, hey, man.
Yeah.
Welcome to your mid to late 20s. Like, listen, man.
What else do you bring to the table?
Well, it's almost like, hey, man, like the you start realizing like the hangovers at 25, like they get worse, man. Like you can't just do it every night.
Yeah. The 2 a.m. nights got they got to cease a little bit, huh?
Yeah, it's like, hey, buddy, let me tell you a really horrible experience. Wait till 30, and then 35, it just keeps getting worse.
That's not good news for me.
No, enjoy it while you have it. You never know like that these
same
are the
boat.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. Let's talk some college football. We'll do it with Blake Topmeyer next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates so you can reach the exact people you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Pat Myers, the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week. Follow him on the Everything app at BTopMeyer. Blake, is the most interesting game this week whatever happens in Lane Kiffin's postgame press conference tomorrow night?
Yeah, that might be pretty interesting. It's the Kiffin Bowl this week. That's pretty fascinating stuff, but pretty good weekend, which is good because next week kind of stinks. I'll be doing Texas Georgia, which is a good one, and Oklahoma Alabama, good one. So pretty good weekend of games.
Yeah, I was telling DeMichael, I actually think in terms of balance, like I don't know if maybe it's like the peak volume of best games all year, but in terms of having something I want to watch all windows, like I think this is the best. And so I guess let's start with the game that you're going to. Is this the Arch gets to prove all the haters wrong night?
It's the opportunity to, and he has been playing better. I was in Austin a couple weeks ago when Vanderbilt was in, and Vanderbilt's weakness obviously is their defense. So I'm not sure how much to take from it, but Arch looked really good that day. And so, you know, I think we could probably kill off the idea of like Arch being the greatest quarterback of all time and all the hype and the hyperbole coming into the season. I don't think he's ever going to be that guy, but he might still be, you know, a good, not great college quarterback, but a good quarterback. He's starting to make some strides in that direction. And we know that Georgia's pass defense is vulnerable. So, I think there's a pretty big opportunity here, but Texas has been sort of Jekyll and Hyde, much better at home versus on the road, really all season long. I mean, had a scare against Mississippi State, had a scare against Kentucky, their losses on the road, they've really been pretty bad on the road. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not ready to call this an elimination game for Texas, because I do think if A&M was 11-0 on Black Friday and Texas is able to beat them in their final statement to the committee, depending on what happened elsewhere, they might have a shot at 9-3. So I don't think it's elimination Saturday for Texas, but this would, you know, help the cause, certainly.
Yeah, with the rankings, I know you wrote about it this week. Can I submit another team that I feel like is getting a pass that nobody seems to want to pick their resume apart? What has Utah done?
Oh my goodness.
Because my theory is the committee has only seen Utah play at home at night.
My goodness, you're absolutely right, and yeah, you're alluding to the fact that I really drew the comparison between where Notre Dame is in the rankings, five spots ahead of where Vanderbilt is when Vanderbilt has the better metrics. But you're right. I mean, what in the world is Utah doing there at number 13? I can't figure that at all. It's like they wanted BYU at 12, and BYU barely beat Utah, so they're like, well, let's just put Utah at 13. But, yeah, I Utah doesn't have the resume for it. But I also think it's the recency bias thing. No, I touched on, I think there's some brand bias in the rankings, but I also think, as much as the brand bias, I think the recency bias might be even worse in the rankings. And Utah's best games have been their last couple games. And so that's fortunate that's what's lingering in the mind of the committee. And I really don't think it should be that way. It should be more so the total body of the work with, you know, what's happened recently, I feel like can be sort of a tiebreaker, you know, if two teams are being equal. But, I mean, like, why is Utah ahead of Miami? There's absolutely no justification for that other than Miami, you know, lost a couple weeks ago, and that's still lingering in the mind. But when you look at the resumes, there's absolutely no reason why Utah should be ahead of Miami.
The average SP plus ranking of Utah's wins is 72.
Oof.
Miami's is 54, and Miami has beaten 6. And, see, they've beaten 6, 30, 48, 20, 28. They have losses to 26 and 33, and then they only have two top 100, you know, outside of the 100s. It's, I don't know, like, to me, like, that's the one that I just feel like we always want to save all our energy up for Bama, for Notre Dame. And it's like, I understand, like, that makes people feel a certain way, but to me, it's like their resume is as thin as anyone's, and I just feel like they're just sitting there, like, twiddling their thumbs while everyone's yelling at Notre Dame.
Yeah, and part of the reason may be because we just are like, well, Utah's not going to get in. They're not going to get any higher than this because they lost to BYU. So they're blocked by BYU if the committee cares at all about head-to-head, which they do when they want to. They don't at other times. But so far,
if they're in the same tier, Blake.
Yeah, if they're in the same tier, then they'll suddenly care about head-to-head. And it seems like they view BYU and Utah that way. And so BYU's got the head-to-head. And so, it's going to be difficult for Utah to get past BYU, and it's difficult for me to see the Big 12. I think the Big 12 may wind up being a one-bid league, but if it's a two-bid league, it still feels like it has to be Texas Tech and BYU at this point. So maybe that's why Utah is getting a pass a little bit, is like, okay, they shouldn't be ranked there. It doesn't make sense, but the Big 12's not getting three anyway. So we'll save our vitriol for other places. But, you know, I think Miami, too. And you know, obviously, I spent a lot of my attention this week on Notre Dame. But I do think Miami, that is, to me, that's another one. Like, they beat Notre Dame. We're all just willing to forget this. You know, I know it was.
Well, you know, it was hot that day, right?
Yeah, it was.
That's
hot
my favorite. They're humidity merchants. I like that. I like that take.
And I know what Notre Dame fans will say. Well, if that game was played again tomorrow, Notre Dame would win. That's an opinion. That's not a fact.
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know that. That's an opinion. That opinion might be true, and it might not be. When they did actually play, Miami won the game. Miami dominated the game for the first half, and then, you know, Notre Dame rallied and made it close at the end. But Notre Dame won the game. And Miami's losses, like, they're not bad losses. That's the other thing, too. Like, I'm waiting to see the enormous flaw in Miami's resume, particularly as compared to a team that they beat in Notre Dame or another team that you've pointed out that they're trailing in Utah. And I just don't see it. I mean, they're two losses, Louisville and SMU. I mean, not playoff teams necessarily, but not terrible teams.
I mean, they're two teams that might play for their conference title.
Right, yeah. I shouldn't say they're not playoff teams. They could still, you know, backdoor their way into the playoffs. So these are not bad losses. They have a great win against Notre Dame. They clubbed Florida, for whatever that's worth, but they did go into another Power Four conference, clubbed Florida. And, yeah, they got a couple losses sitting there, but that one to me is flying below the radar, too, of like – and I, you know, the talking heads on the show Tuesday night was like, oh, the committee course-corrected on Miami. No, they didn't. They just moved them up.
Yeah, it's just
the ahead of them lost.
Yeah, that's it.
There was no course correct. The teams ahead of them lost, and so they slid them up a couple spots. That they're still being snubbed in the rankings when you look at their resume and a couple of the teams ahead of them.
I almost wonder this: in that game, Mario went 4-minute offense. What, with 13 minutes left in the third quarter?
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah.
If they would have kept pushing the issue, and like they would have actually like blown them out, because like, I think at one point it was like 31-7. You know, it was a bloodbath. But they kept just like trying to end the game like in the third quarter. And it's like, well, okay, we'll keep fighting, is what Notre Dame said. If they would have just kept playing and they have like, you know, a 14-21 point win, are we viewing them differently?
I think so. I mean, at that point, the argument of, well, they'd win, you know, Notre Dame would win if they played again tomorrow, sort of falls on deaf ears. Because, like, you can make that argument with the score, the final score being as close as it was. Like, maybe people forget that they watched that game and Miami dominated for three quarters, or maybe they didn't watch that game and they're just looking at the score and they're like, oh, this was a close game. Yeah. When the final buzzer sounded, it was a close game. But it was, to me, it was a lot like the Texas-Vanderbilt game that I covered just a couple weeks ago. Like, for three quarters of that game, Texas proved it was the better team, and then as these things happen sometimes, Vanderbilt rallied in the fourth quarter and made it a game. But like the rankings show that the committee believes Texas is a better team than Vanderbilt. There's quite a bit of gap there between those two teams in the rankings. But with Notre Dame, they're suddenly ahead of Miami, even though Miami, you know, ruled that game for three quarters. And I think it's a couple things. It was early in the season, and yeah, Notre Dame rallied at the end to make it respectable. But I think you're so right. Like, and maybe that's a learning lesson for everybody. Like, if you have a team up by, you know, if you're up by 17 points or whatever on a team, don't just do this run out the clock, because, you know, then if it gets into a head-to-head situation, they can say, hey, it was a close game, and the committee can do whatever it wants. Like, you need to bury teams when you've got a good opponent on the ropes. Like, bury them and get a three-score win. And then nobody can question it, you know, no matter how many weeks go by.
No, it's kind of like we're back in the BCS era where
style points.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, where, you know, Stoops couldn't wait to beat, you know, Baylor 56-0, like, you know, just right. And kept the starters in. And like, listen, man, that's kind of part of it. All right, let's go to the other big SEC game. Is it an elimination game for Oklahoma?
I think it's more of an elimination game for Oklahoma than it is for Texas, because they have the head-to-head loss, and the committee with those two teams sees them similarly. So I think it's – man, I don't know if I want to go all the way, because Notre Dame – or excuse me, we're talking about Notre Dame. Oklahoma's strength of schedule is going to be fabulous. But because they lost to Texas, it's like they need Texas to lose both, which they might to Georgia and A&M, but they need Texas to get out of the way. Because if they both finish 9-3, I feel like they have to take Texas. The other thing is, if Vanderbilt finishes 10-2, and it comes down to 9-3 Oklahoma or 10-2 Vanderbilt, like, Oklahoma will have a better strength of schedule, but Vanderbilt's strength of schedule will be pretty darn good too, and they'll have the better record. And so I think they're going to take Oklahoma, because they're going to take Vanderbilt at 10-2 over 9-3 Oklahoma, because they'll each have the same best win probably at Neyland Stadium at that point. So yeah, it's pretty close to an elimination game for Oklahoma. I don't know that I want to go all the way there yet, because Vanderbilt could lose, you know, Texas could lose twice and fall to 8-4, and you know, chaos could ensue, and there could be Oklahoma there at 9-3 with the strength of schedule maybe getting in. But I would say there is less of a path for Oklahoma to get in, I think, at 9-3 than for Texas at 9-3, because Texas has the head-to-head. And I like Vanderbilt, if they were to get to 10-2, better than I like Oklahoma at 9-3.
How weird does this get if Oklahoma wins? Because then, see, what Oklahoma's remainder would be Missouri and LSU, correct?
Yes.
All right, so we would have Bama at 10-2. Like, that's where I start to think. It's kind of this weird thing where Bama is, like, getting the respect, and it's like, I don't necessarily think it's undeserved, but we are kind of ignoring the fact that of these teams we're talking about, they have one of the worst losses. Like, right. This is where I wonder, like, listen, I don't think Oklahoma's going to win, but I didn't think Oklahoma's going to beat Tennessee either. And I know Alabama's better than Tennessee, but, like, that's what we've seen in college football. Like, that's where I think it starts to get weird, because then what, Bama goes to 7-1. They would still have a tiebreaker over Georgia. But then what happens if Ole Miss gets to 7-1? Does Georgia then go to the title game? Like, that's where I think it starts to get weird.
I believe Bama has to lose twice to not go to the SEC title game. I think whoever's played out those tiebreaker scenarios, if they lose to Oklahoma, I think they would still go to the SEC title game at 10-2 overall, assuming they don't lose the Iron Bowl. They'd be 10-2, 7-1 in the SEC, and I think that the tiebreakers would go in their favor, and they'd be there in Atlanta.
Well,
so
think about this, though. Weird. This is where I think it'd be hilarious. All right, let's say Texas runs the table. So that would put them at 7-1 in the league. Then Bama, let's say that happened. Like, let's say that they lose tomorrow, but they beat Auburn. They're at 7-1. Oklahoma would be 6-2. Ole Miss at 7-1. Like, the funny thing to me is you'd have all these teams that would actually, I think, be fighting to not be in the SEC championship game.
Oh yeah, I think that's right. But getting back to your point on Bama from earlier, like, I'm comfortable with the respect they're getting now, because they have been playing pretty well lately. They've played a pretty tough schedule. They keep winning. But I do think if they lose at home to Oklahoma, which I don't think it's going to happen, but if they do, then there needs to be a course correct. Like, I'm comfortable with the respect with where they're sitting now. I think that's absolutely where they should be sitting. But if they lose to Oklahoma, there has to be a course correct in the rankings. And I think they need to appropriately fall several spots. And then it becomes, what happens if they go to the SEC championship at 10-2 and suffer a third loss?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the committee is going to put them in, because they showed their hand last year. They don't want to punish these teams that are in position for the playoff and then lose their conference championship game. But you know, that'd be a tricky scenario for there for Bama. You got the law. If they lose to Oklahoma, they're going to take a tumble in the rankings. They're still sitting in the playoff picture. But then if they come out in the SEC championship and lose, I mean, what if they lose by multiple scores? I mean, I think they would still be in the playoff, because I don't think the committee is going to punish the SEC runner-up so prohibitively that they'd be out of the playoff. But with three losses at that point, what, you could be sitting on the 10 or 11 seed. So point being, this is a really important game for both teams tomorrow, Bama and Oklahoma. It's not going to knock Bama out of the playoff, but it would do, I think, some major damage to their potential seeding.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is, even though, you know, we've talked about it and we're getting here, it does feel like the switch was turned up to 11 of, wow, these championship games really don't mean anything. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was trending this way, but now it's like, when you really do think about it, it's like, man, we are literally just playing these because they make a bunch of money.
Yeah, for two conferences in particular, the Big Ten and SEC, I would still argue they mean something in the Big 12 and the ACC. I mean, the ACC, it's going to be a play-in game this year. I think that's going to be a one-bid league. In the Big 12, I think it's going to be a play-in game for BYU. If they lose to Texas Tech a second time, at best, they're going to be on the bubble. At worst, they're going to be left out in the cold. So I think for two of the four Power Four conferences, I think there's still significant meaning to them. For the other two conferences,
well, let's go to the Big 12 though. If Tech gets there at 11-1, isn't it kind of meaningless for them?
Well, I think they're going to be in regardless. I think the difference is first round home game or first round road game. I mean that's pretty significant, I think.
Plus, we don't know what incentives all these guys have in their contracts now. Like well, we used to just only have to think about it from the coaching perspective. We don't know. Are players getting bonuses too?
Yeah, great point. Great point. But I do think the seeding is going to be a big deal this year because, last year, okay, Ohio State wins it as the 8th seed, and I think then the knee-jerk reaction is to be like, well, seeding doesn't really matter because Ohio State just won it as the 8th seed. Well, Ohio State, the committee did a terrible job seeding Ohio State last year. We were talking about this a year ago. Ohio State should have been seeded about 5th or 6th in the bracket. They were suffering from that recency bias that we were talking about. They lost to Michigan, and so they conveniently forgot that they beat Penn State in the head-to-head, and for some stupid reason, Ohio State was 8. But that doesn't mean that every 8 seed is going to enjoy a beautiful path to the championship. Like, Ohio State didn't enjoy a great path to the championship last year. They were just the best team in the nation, and so they were able to get through the bracket anyway. But I do think, overall, that seeding does matter, to a bigger extent than maybe Ohio State proved last year. Like, I don't want to be the 8 seed this year if it means playing Ohio State in the quarterfinals. I don't think Ohio State's necessarily inevitable, but I do think they're probably the best team in the country, and I don't really want to play them if I can help it. I think seeding matters to a degree, but the overall point, the shine is definitely off of some of these conference championships. But if it's number one Ohio State versus number two Indiana, even though I know that game's not going to mean a ton, it's the difference between, Indiana getting like the one seed versus what, maybe the 3 or 4 seed. And it's the difference between Ohio State getting the one seed versus the 3 seed. So it's not that big of a deal if it's 2 undefeated in the Big Ten championship, but I'm still going to watch it because it's still going to be, I think, an awesome game of potentially 1 versus 2.
No, I'm with you on that. I guess where I'm starting to think about those, I think the target seed for me would be the 5.
Yeah.
And the biggest reason why is, listen, I know it's fun to play out game out ACC.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North's Doors True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.